Warnings for Christmas Tree.
Although this story ends well, it does deal with serious issues, including past long-term emotional, physical, and sexual abuse of a minor, past forced miscarriage, suicidal thoughts, homelessness, and starvation. Also, this is a werewolf story with alpha-beta-omega dynamics, so there will be heat-induced mating, sexual contact while both parties are in animal form, nodding, and male pregnancy.
It is also suggested by a secondary character that euthanasia is an acceptable solution to the problem of a out-of-control or mentally ill werewolf. Christmas Tree, written by Annie's Pink House and read by Eos Rose.
Chapter 1. Jared. In the end, it was a Christmas tree that saved Jared. It was 7 feet of lush, green, undecorated foliage, which spread the sharp tang of an alien wilderness into the air, like the fog of a heady drug. Maybe it was the fresh fragrance that woke him from a 5-year stupor, or perhaps he had always been looking for an exit, the instinct hidden deep, on an unconscious level, even once all the hope had left him. His alpha was lugging the oversized decoration out of the SUV with his beta, Meg, taking the rest of the weight, steering the item and moaning about the trail of needles that dropped onto the soft leather seating. For 10 wonderful, groundbreaking minutes, the pre-Christmas tension broke into a full-on dominance posturing row. Their selfish, demanding pups were engrossed in a race on the games console, and, for 10 crucial, glorious moments, everyone forgot that their Omega was unattended and untied while he cleaned the main house to an exacting shine. Jared slipped out of the door and ran. His escape took him through dirty alleys and fluorescent-lit subways. For 2 days he hid in the darkest corners, skulking in terror of silver bullets and the snarling fangs of packs that would run him off, or maybe worse. He looked at the strangers who passed him by and was sure they saw what he was. He worried about illicit fur traders who would attempt to shift a werewolf to take its life for the value of its skin. But more than that, more than anything, he struggled to contain the raw, gnawing hunger that cramped his belly and threatened to consume his mind. The city was a dangerous place for a lone werewolf, and when that were was a mere Omega, starving, cold, and unable to shift, escape from such precarious situations became almost impossible. Yes, it was a Christmas tree that saved Jared, but perhaps not that one. He waited until the market was closing, joined the throng of expectant vagrants that surged for the trash cans as the stall holders tipped away the unwanted and rotting remains of their trade. It wasn't in his nature to wrestle for anything. His alpha had seen to that when he thoroughly instilled his submission. Jared lost the fight with only a few leaves of old cabbage to maintain him. He slunk back into the shadows and waited until he could leave without drawing attention. In 2 days on the street, he had learned to hide his youthful face and lean body from those who saw a hungry young man and assumed he would welcome their advances. He was done with all that. He would die before he allowed anyone in again. The strong, sweet, and sharp aroma of wilderness assaulted his oversensitive olfactory nerves, and he moved, drawn by an invisible force, to the loading bay, where men whistled Christmas songs while they hefted and threw a pile of fresh-cut pine trees into the store. He drew his breath and held in the wonderful fragrance until his lungs were fit to burst. Something primal drew him close to the neatly cut Christmas forest. When sudden movement startled him, he hid in the only place he could find that afforded him enough space. He leapt onto an almost empty truck bed and made for the very end, behind the only tree that remained. He ducked under a tarpaulin that covered an assortment of logging tools and curled up small under its sparse protection. He heard the squeak and scrape that the final tree made as they began to tug it over the fallen twigs and needles on the truck bed, and Jared squeezed his eyes closed. He was bound to be discovered without the protection of the sharp foliage. Somebody whistled and shouted, "Hey, leave that one. I'm taking it home." The driver high-fived the men who had helped him unload, stepped back to his truck, and slammed the door with a metallic clunk. For a moment, Jared could detect another scent, faint and disturbing, under the pungent pine, but it was gone before he could name it. He was still there, with closed eyes and trembling flesh, when the workers slid the safety rail in place and shouted their goodbye. The engine fired and roared. Cold wind tugged at the tarpaulin, and he hung on tight under the canvas as it blew in the funneled air. Yes, it was a Christmas tree that saved Jared, but perhaps not this time. Jensen. Katie squealed and put down her phone. She extended her hand to Jensen, swung her hips, pulled him from the sofa, and began to sing. "Rockin' around the Christmas tree."
Katie, do you have to?
"Yes, I do. Chad's at the store buying a string of Christmas lights. He found the perfect Christmas tree, and, as Alpha, you are going to organize and encourage us in an enthusiastic manner." Jensen laughed and relaxed into the dance, adding his deep, tuneful voice to the mix. "Oh, party!" Genevieve entered the room with a long trail of tinsel in her hand. She sidled up to Jensen's back and draped it around their Alpha's neck. The petite Omega slipped her hands about his waist and rested her head on him and swayed with them. "Everyone's dancing merrily in a new old-fashioned way." Chad's truck scrunched over the snow and squeaked to a halt. A soft snowball landed on his head as he jumped from the cab of his truck. "Hey, Santa's gonna put you on his naughty list," he yelled at Christian, before returning the favor. The rest of the pack mobbed them with demands to stop the distraction and get on with settling the proud tree in their yard. Jensen threatened the withdrawal of cookie rights, and they soon settled. Nobody wanted to miss out on Milo's cookies. As they took the tree from the truck, Jensen sniffed the air curiously.
"Chad, who's been in the truck?"
They all stopped, and Chad inhaled by Jensen's side.
"That's weird," he said. "I didn't notice another ware at the market, but I guess the smell of the trees was overpowering."
"It's very faint," added Katie. The Beta came to Jensen's side, her instinct to protect the pack coming to the fore as she investigated the scent. Christian joined her, and they scrabbled and sniffed in unison.
"It's not Alpha. It is sweet," Jensen inhaled again. "It was more than good. It was pure ambrosia." "It's Omega, and there is a good measure of adrenaline. The wolf was excited or fearful," Christian added.
"Or we were all working our paws off and sweating up a storm to make everyone else's Christmas perfect," Chad moaned.
Jensen was still inhaling, with a slightly dreamy look on his face. Christian sneaked a glance at their Alpha.
"Looks like Chad will have a passenger next time he has a city delivery, eh, boss?"
Jensen snapped a glare at him.
"I have better things to do with my time than go on a wild goose chase."
"Now the pack has a home and stability, surely there's nothing more important than finding your mate," Katie declared. Genevieve hid behind Milo, and Milo shuffled his feet. Jensen dismissed the topic.
"Let's get this thing up, shall we?"
The snow was falling, thick and steady. Jensen was restless. He made a cup of cocoa and settled by the window with his book. Everyone else had retired to bed. Christian made his excuses early, closely followed by the ebullient Chad and his quiet Omega mate, Milo. Genevieve had slunk to bed shortly after that. He was relieved that she had retired to her own bed, because, while she and Christian remained stalwartly single, they weren't above the occasional session of extremely athletic comfort sex, and Jensen really didn't feel like hearing that tonight. Katie had stayed up longest with him. Her mate, Steve, was away for a business conference, and Jensen could tell she was missing him. Misha and Steve would return together on Christmas Eve, and the pack would have their first Christmas together in this place that they had made their home. He allowed himself a smile. If anyone had told him, a year ago, that he would be settled with a young pack of his own in a town that knew their secret and supported them, he never would have believed them. It was always assumed that Jensen would follow his father as Alpha of the Ackles, an established Texas pack. But his father was still a strong leader and looked to have many good years ahead. Jensen may be physically stronger, but that wasn't a consideration. This wasn't the Dark Ages. Jensen used his time positively. He worked hard to gain a degree in physical therapy and took the fast track into his career by working all hours. He had plenty of time to find a mate later. That he still hadn't at 27 was disappointing to his parents, but they never complained. Jensen was quiet, but he found a number of loyal friends in school and later in university. He had been shocked when his father had first pulled him aside and asked him to consider the merits of his small core of Ware acquaintances. Despite being from several different packs, they fit together. They were an ideal combination of strong, intelligent, Alpha, Beta, and Omega personalities. That kernel of thought sprouted and grew. Alan Ackles never ran Jensen from his pack, but he nudged him into action, gave him sound advice, loving support, and the money toward the deposit on the home that currently sparkled with tinsel and glitter. There were photographs of the pack on the wall. He stood to study a picture from the pivotal holiday they took 18 months earlier. They were waving into the camera with cheesy, wide smiles by the sign that declared, "Welcome to Wolf Pass National Park, population 1057. Milo and Chad stood awkwardly together, at a time when their love was fresh and undeclared to the rest of the pack. Katie was single, she hadn't met Steve yet. Then there was Jensen, Christian, and Jen, buddies since high school, and Misha, who somehow joined them in a coffee shop, somewhere on their travels, and never left. He stroked the glass-covered picture and turned back to the window to look out into the snow-speckled night that shrouded the wild forested hills of Wolf Pass, their home. The Christmas tree shone a bright beacon into the snow-laden night. Katie and Jen had strictly controlled the decorations, so the design was a piece of art in itself. Jensen thought it was enchanting, but, enchanting or not, the lights would have to be turned off overnight. Jensen padded toward the kitchen, where the switch was housed. He stilled as his sensitive hearing picked up the quiet sound of dislodged snow whooshing to the ground, and something that may have been the trash cans rattling. "Damn raccoons," he thought. He unlocked the back door and peered into the night. A pile of snow lay in front of the closed trash can, and a slight trail led away. He sighed and closed the door against the cold. "Time for bed," he thought. The light outside caught his eye, and he remembered he had been in the kitchen to flip the switch off. He made to shut the curtains, but a movement in the cold terrain caught his eye. He wondered if he was somehow dreaming. There was a young man standing by the Christmas tree. He was tall and thin as a rake. Dark hair peeped from a snow-soaked hoodie, and his feet sank into the white, with no sign of boots. Long fingers reached to the tree and touched it gently. The man tilted his head upwards to stare at the angel atop the tree as he stroked the needles, eyes wide in wonder. While his attire was inadequate and his appearance unkempt, he didn't seem to be in distress, and his touch was reverent rather than destructive. Jensen recalled that several of the townspeople had student offspring staying over the holidays, and wondered which household this irresponsible boy would return to, frozen through and dripping on the floor. He rolled his eyes and huffed. He wouldn't be much of a neighbor if he didn't at least offer some warmth. The lock rattled as he unlocked the door. He started to wedge it open, only to see the back of the boy as he ran away. Jensen considered running after him.
He could easily catch up if he shifted into wolf form. He dismissed the idea quickly. The last thing they needed was to scare the neighbors' children. His pack was lucky to be accepted here. It could degenerate quickly with tales of youngsters being chased by hungry wolves. He locked back up and went to bed. Jared. The trash yielded boxes from baking supplies, yards of rumpled tape, and slivers of wrapping paper, as if the person wrapping presents struggled with awkward shapes. There had been meat bones and a chicken carcass which had, at least, been wrapped before being disposed of. He stuffed them under his sodden hoodie. Later, he would be grateful for the meager pickings. He salivated at the thought of them, but saved them to eat in the dubious shelter of the forest. He hadn't meant to touch the tree, but the lure was undeniable. It was a thing of pure beauty, and it radiated the love and warmth of those who had decorated it. There were lights on in the house, and it seemed cozy and welcoming. It reminded him of the time before, when he was human, or as near to it as anywhere got to be. Christmas had been a big affair with his parents. They spoiled their only child and welcomed friends to their city apartment with a big fuss. Maybe if they had told him then, he would have understood the gatherings. It might have afforded him some protection. But they left that secret, the big one, until it was too late. Until after the police came to collect him from school. Until after the funeral. Until his hormones went crazy and his behavior became violent. Until the day his care worker pushed him at his new foster care in exchange for a stack of notes, and the cruel lip tipped as a heavy hand rested on his neck. "I know what you are," the man had snarled. "You will call me Alpha, and you are my Omega." Jared still hadn't understood. Not until the last of the suppressants had left his system, and he shifted for the first and only time. The sense, the instincts, and the emotions were overwhelming. He wanted to run, but the city was busy and his form unfamiliar. His paws were uncoordinated, and the sounds and vision too intense. His Alpha was huge and mean, and he couldn't understand why he tipped his neck to him and let it be marked as taken. Why he shivered with anticipation as the wolf form of the man he hated mounted and took him. Why his bitch body humped at the air, and his channel slicked and welcomed the knot. It shamed him that he rested meekly under the huge Alpha, while the knot pumped hot semen into him, over and over again, and the rest of the small pack watched. When the knot slipped free, he had slunk away with his tail between his legs, and head low. He had curled small with his tail over his nose, under his tiny bed in the box room. They locked him in there while they ran free, and by morning he had managed to cajole his aching human body back. The next day his pack described the ugliness of his wolf form. They fed him bile caplets to prevent his hideous pups from forming, and the drug made him sweat, cramp, and vomit. He didn't object when a daily suppressant dose was added with his sparse meals. He had never shifted again. When he touched the tree, small bells chimed. He raised his head and saw the golden angel that smiled down over him, and he considered the bright house. He stroked at the needles on one of the branches, soft and smooth when handled the right way, and wondered if he could walk right up to the people here and ask for shelter. The sharp clattering of the door echoed and pounded his ears with physical hurt. The suppressants would soon be utterly gone from his blood, and he couldn't decide if it was a good or bad thing. For now, he craved the warmth of his wolf form, and that would make it welcome, but there was little else good that could come of it. If it weren't for his inner wolf, he would have succumbed to hyperthermia hours ago. Then again, if it weren't for his wolf, he would never have been in this predicament at all. All thought of taking shelter here was chased away by the scent that wafted to him on a swirling ice breeze. It was strong, masculine musk and pheromone. His heightened sense of smell told him it was unmistakably werewolf, and undoubtedly
Elpha. It wasn't unpleasant in the way that he was used to, but for him it spelled danger. He turned from the house and forced his blue frozen limbs to cooperate. He waded through deep snow until he reached the first stand of mixed pine and heard the slam of the door and locks being reapplied. He found a sheltered hollow, and when he had exhausted himself in an unsuccessful attempt to shift, he curled into a small, uncomfortable ball and nibbled at the bones he had stolen.
Jensen. The morning was chaos. Chad climbed into his truck and drove off to check on the campsites and projects that took most of his time as a park ranger. Katie and Milo walked together to the small school where Katie taught and Milo assisted in the nursery. Christian was on late shift at the bar, so he slept late, and Jen organized Jensen's schedule and took calls before running out to volunteer at the library. Jensen worked from home. He had a large room converted to take patients that doctors referred to his care, and he visited the hospital 2 days a week. He made a quick tour of the kitchen and cleared debris that had been left lying. He may be Alpha, but he was equally responsible for the chores, and working from home gave him time for the little tasks. He wrapped the waste and stepped outside to tip it into the trash. The scent assaulted him as soon as he lifted the lid, sweet and spicy and distinctly werewolf. In fact, the same wolf he had scented in Chad's truck. And if that was odd, then the fact that said werewolf had obviously been dumpster diving for their scraps was even more so. There was a whole forest of wild creatures within a few strides of their house, and the pack had never had trouble taking something down when they went out, even if it was generally a token rabbit, to skin and bake into a casserole for a few of the elderly residents. Jensen recalled the noises from the previous night and the young man that had reached to the Christmas tree, and at least some of it made sense. The snow was thick, and, if this was their stray werewolf, the wind had blown away from the house, so the scent may not have reached him. Besides, there was something too faint and altogether weak about the smell. Sure, an Omega was less pungent than a Beta or Alpha, but this was less again. Whatever the circumstances, a strange wear spelled trouble for his small pack, and if there was evidence that it was staying nearby, the pack would need to make a decision about what to do with it. Jensen's last client finished in early afternoon, and he took time to talk with Christian about his suspicions. Christian, another Alpha and second in command, was every bit at a loss as he was.
A lone Omega? How can that even happen? It's not like he will have challenged for Pack Alpha, and he's not here to claim territory. Why would any pack exile an Omega?
Jensen shrugged his shoulders.
I've heard the occasional story. If the Omega has been caught in a compromising position with a member of another pack, or if there has been a crime committed, once because the Pack Alpha wanted to force an unsuitable mating, sometimes a wild pack will exile a sick wolf.
That's pretty cruel.
They don't have the benefit of antibiotics.
It might explain the weak scent.
It doesn't explain why he was fully dressed, in human form, and rummaging for scraps.
Christian hummed and scratched his head.
Guess not. I'll see what I can find out at work today. Of course, the simplest thing would be to track him down and ask his intentions. Chad's always good for that.
Yeah, replied Jensen.
Anyhow, chances are he was passing through. He's probably long gone by now.
He walked into town to chat with Sheriff Hodge. It didn't hurt to maintain PR and keep in contact. Aldous Hodge had been instrumental in the pack being invited to settle in this town, and Jensen regarded him as a good friend.
I was looking to speak to you.
Aldous looked serious. He grabbed at Jensen and pulled him towards the coffee house before the Alpha had the opportunity to speak.
Double espresso with blueberry muffin?
This must be bad.
He joked, but his friend just frowned. Aldous made sure Jensen had taken his first sip before he spoke.
Look, I'm the one who knows that your pack is reliable. I was the one who you helped when you didn't have to. You found a kidnapped boy when others would have continued out of town, unwilling to tell us what you were and how you could scent and track the boy. For that, the entire town was grateful. So consider this a warning. As long as you identify the culprit, bring him in and let us deal with it.
Jensen practically spat out his coffee.
A warning for what?
One of your pack, out of control, up on Black Ridge this morning. The bunny massacre was almost forgivable, aside from them being pets, but geez, I thought you killed things outright. It's not like your boy even got a meal.
Jensen's eyes widened in panic.
Little Sarah's bunnies, honey and marmalade?
Strawberry jam now, said Aldous, but the joke wasn't meant to be funny.
Oh, God, poor Sarah.
Jensen buried his head in his hands. Aldous reached his hand over Jensen's.
Jen, I hate to piss on your parade, but it's not all. It was Sarah herself. She trusted all of you, and when she tried to save her rabbits, your boy turned on her, faced her down, and snarled. Stopped just short of the pounce, according to her pa. He was lucky he backed up and ran before her pappy got his shotgun.
Jensen had turned pale.
What time?
About 11,
Jensen calculated. Look, Christian was with me, everyone else was at work.
Can you account for Chad? Will Christian back you up?
Aldous, Jensen shook his head. I don't think it was one of us. I know how it looks, but I was coming to see you. I needed to know if you'd seen anyone new about town. We had a wear by the house last night. Raided our trash can. A tall, scruffy guy with dark hair.
Aldous leaned back and scrutinized Jensen.
Are you saying that there is another werewolf in town? A little convenient, don't you think?
Jensen got angry.
Look, nothing is convenient, Aldous. There's a little girl scared witless and an uncontrolled werewolf on the prowl. Now, you can continue pointing the finger at me, or you can let me help before somebody gets killed.
Aldous sucked in a breath.
Wow, there's the pack alpha talking. You're in luck, Ackles. I believe you. There was a guy matching your description. Rolled into town late evening. He was hassling some of our storekeepers, asking for work. Getting quite overwrought, saying he'd work for food.
And nobody offered him anything to eat?
Thing is, he's a tall one and dirty. He wouldn't give a name. He had no ID and no belongings. It stank of recent ex-con just turned out. He had that look they get, like the world is too big for him. We asked him to leave. He said he had no money and old Remus in the post office asked what was wrong with walking. He said, okay, and took off.
Jensen gulped his coffee. He fought to contain his anger with the townspeople. He knew that they were mostly generous people, and that the stranger had looked threatening. But damn it, it wouldn't have hurt to feed a starving man.
Guess we better find him, Aldous. His clothes weren't even half adequate for the weather. And if he felt the need to search trash for scraps, then he must be starving. A hungry wolf is a dangerous thing.
His brows knitted.
Aldous, honestly, I saw the guy, and he is ridiculously thin. I'm surprised he managed to pull back from the attack on Sarah. She's a small child, easy prey, and he was already in a blood frenzy. However bad it looks for the pack, you should put out a warning. Make sure children aren't playing in vulnerable areas. I'll gather the rest of the pack and we'll go hunting.
Will you kill him?
Aldous, that's an absolute last resort. Like I say, he's starving, and yet he managed to pull back from an attack that few others could resist. He may not be a bad guy.
Jensen couldn't help the vivid memory of his sweet scent, or of the sight of the tall youth who reached to stroke their Christmas tree.
It didn't seem like the action of a ruthless killer.
Jared. Jared felt sick. He licked at the blood on his coat, and it tasted delicious and atrocious all at once. His human mind battled with his wolf ego for supremacy in this shared mind and lupine body. He didn't even know if his wolf could be sick. It had seemed like a godsend when he had woken in a faint reflected sun to rub his snout over a thick furred coat. He had shifted in his sleep, another thing he hadn't known was possible. Maybe it was normal, or maybe he had simply wanted it enough. Whatever, it had felt good. Every sense was heightened. He had a new energy and the buzz of a myriad wild scents and noises fired through this unfamiliar body. He felt joyful and alive, and this foreign, empty landscape suddenly became home, life, and breath. He rose and tested his limbs. It wasn't easy, but with his newfound enthusiasm, he managed to coordinate four paws with his tail and body. He was hungry, and instinct kicked in. He could hear the little heartbeats, smell warm blood that raced in the bodies of creatures he was now super aware of. He found himself drooling, the thick saliva falling onto his paw. Hunting wasn't as easy as he had anticipated, and he found the pads of his paws getting sore as he roamed and stalked and pounced with increasing despair of ever catching a meal. The longer he spent in his wolf form, the more his instinct seemed to take over and human thought slipped. He was desperate and focused. He couldn't remember the exact events leading up to the encounter with the child, but he remembered the blood on his lips, the coppery tang on his tongue hitting his stomach, and an all-encompassing need for more, more, more. He had given in to a red haze of primal intensity until, in a brief moment of lucidity, his sight cleared, and he was staring down a small child, barely older than a toddler. He could hear the intent in his own snarl and feel the tension in his body. And suddenly the human Jared was screaming in his wolf mind to stop this, to shift and end the danger. He couldn't change. He didn't know how. He stepped his wolf back and turned to flee, tripping over his own paws as he ran. He was still hungry. He made himself get up on tired legs to try to make sense of the place he found himself. He was at about hip height to his normal stance, and it made everything unfamiliar. His nose sniffed the air, and his brain received messages, some he could decode, the smell of creatures nearby, the whiff of the pine, his own strange omega scent. Others were more difficult. He was fairly sure his wolf should be able to interpret them and use it to find something, even if he didn't know what he was looking for. He had no pack and no destination. He knew he couldn't make it across this vast wilderness alone, and yet he understood, with every breath of pure air, that he couldn't go back to the city. It was obvious he would have to return to Wolf Pass to find food, but if he couldn't shift, he was too dangerous to be near people. A hint of werewolf scent wafted in on a breeze, and he knew the only place he could go to look for scraps. He had found sustenance in their trash once before. He would have to try again. If he was lucky, the pack worked during the day. He hadn't seen evidence of cubs, so he may get lucky. If there was another reason why the scent lured him in, he was in no fit state to examine it. In stark white daylight, the huge house that sat on the edge of Wolf Pass reeked of wear. He was shocked he hadn't smelled it on his last visit. It pulled him in for miles, like a blinking red light in the night. Even though he sensed no inhabitants within the house, Jared watched for what seemed like an age, to confirm that nobody was at home. He still hadn't shifted. He had to knock at the trash and scrabble his paws against the can until it fell, spilling pungent, filthy treasure over the clean white blanket. His pride left him with the aroma of old bread, fruit peels, and butter wrappers. He ripped and tore at the trash until he had devoured every crumb of stale bread and each rind of apple, and then licked the wrappers clean. It wasn't enough, not nearly, but it pushed back the growl and ache of his empty stomach and gave him brief respite from his exhaustion. He should have left immediately, but he saw it again. He looked at it with the keen eyes of a wolf, the same sight but different vision of light and scent, still beautiful through his wolf's perception. He crept to the Christmas tree and pressed his snout right into it until the bells clanged, loud and distinctive. He looked up, searching for the angel at the top of the tree, but he couldn't see it from this angle. He backed up, mistiming his coordination, and his tail landed with his back end in the snow, and now he could see it. He treasured the moment, but he didn't wait. He turned and loped into the forest. He would have to make a den somewhere far from the town, and if he was going to survive, he needed to learn to hunt. Chapter 2 Jensen. Chad was a great tracker. Even in the wolf community, his skills shone. But it soon became obvious that the circumstances didn't require his expertise. This wolf was slow and clumsy, and the pack had no trouble following his trail. They caught his scent, and the trail led heavily to their own home. Jensen cleared the mess of rubbish on the ground and followed large paw prints to the Christmas tree.
"He came to the tree again," he said softly.
Milo stood by his side.
"The trail is too easy. Everything is wrong with this. Why do you think he took scraps, Alpha? Something's not right with him, is it? We won't have to kill him, will we?"
He spoke soft and sympathetic. Milo was always the caregiver of the group.
"I don't know, Milo. He may be sick, but I don't know. I haven't got the answers."
"He came here after the girl. He took scraps rather than continue hunting. I don't think he wants to hurt anyone."
Jensen gave him a soft look and gently touched his arm.
"Milo, you know it's not always as simple as that."
They hunted as wolves, and it wasn't long before they caught up with him, near to the gorge. Jensen saw him clambering over rock and stopped for a moment. The wolf had a large frame. Its coat was thick and shaggy long, of darkest gray with hints of black. If it weren't for the shape of his ribs poking through the skin and the sunken, sick features, he would be huge and astoundingly beautiful. The wolf caught the scent of their pack. Jensen saw him turn to look in their direction, and the slanted hazel orbs gazed at him. He froze for a few seconds, bewitched by the stare, but the lone wolf laid his ears flat to his head, his knees flexed, and he curled his lip into a warning with a low, growled snarl. Christian tensed, ready for the chase, but Jensen's voice, clear in his head, stalled him.
"He's terrified. Wait."
Jensen reined his adrenaline in. He stalled the rest of the pack and inched forward, belly close to the ground, to maintain a non-aggressive posture.
"My name is Jensen."
He threw the thought toward the stranger, knowing he had to hear it.
"I won't hurt you. I just need to talk with you."
The lone wolf tipped his head and whined. The intelligent hazel eyes showed no reduction of terror, and there was no reply.
"You scared a girl. She's not hurt. We can work this out. I know you're hungry. We have food. We can talk and eat."
The whining increased. It became a sharp, pained whimper, and the stranger rubbed a paw frantically over his ears. Jensen heard Milo.
"He's sick." "Poor thing," Jen added.
Jensen looked back at them. And in that moment, the wolf flexed and ran. The chase was over quickly. There was little strength left in the stranger, and his fear took him in a dangerous direction.
"Cool it, guys. We're at the limit," Chad reminded the pack, but they all knew their territory.
Their quarry skidded to a halt at the very edge, and stones skittered and bounced down the sheer cliff of the gorge. They saw him look into the distance and down at the abyss. There was no purchase or escape, even for the nimblest of animals. They approached warily, spread out but moving as a pack, waiting for the moment that he would turn back to them and start to fight. It was inevitable with a wolf in this position. He would either submit or fight to the death. The hazel eyes locked on Jensen. The muzzle moved as the stranger snuffed and wheezed. Jensen knew he was looking into pools of pure desperation, and his dominance and calm reassurances weren't working. There was no communication or indication of understanding. If he didn't know better, he would think this was a pure, wild wolf. But then he caught the slightest movement, a hint of intent, and Jensen knew what this wolf was about to do, and no wolf would ever make that choice. Even a werewolf wouldn't take that choice, because suicide is a peculiarly human action. Christian saw it, too, and spoke first.
"He wouldn't."
"Back off. Everyone except Milo. Back off." They all obeyed their alpha without question, even if he could hear their doubt in his mind. The lone wolf saw the withdrawal and stalled, but there was still the danger. Jensen shifted into human form with ease. He sat naked and cross-legged on the snow by Milo's furry form. Milo relaxed with his paws outstretched, as if sunbathing, posing as little threat as he reasonably could.
"Don't. Please don't. You don't have to do that," Jensen begged.
A dark muzzle turned to him, and he finally saw understanding from the stranger.
"I don't think you can hear me when I am wolf, can you?"
There was hesitation, then a reply. No wolf answer, this, but a human version. The long head shook from side to side.
"No, you can't. It's good that we know. You can hear me now, though. We're talking now, right?"
Jensen couldn't help the panic that tinged his voice. He was alpha. He was always in control. But in this situation, he was lost. He had no control and not a clue what he should do. If this wolf died, it would be his fault. His pack had pursued him to the edge of this cliff. They had forced a weak, panicking Omega into this position and would be responsible for his death.
"We don't want to hurt you. The others are all going home, all except me and my friend Milo. My name is Jensen."
Christian growled a question, and Jensen shot him down.
"You think I couldn't take him alone if necessary? Look at him, Christian. Milo could take him down without pause. Just go. Make up an extra bed and have a meal prepared."
The stranger snarled and snapped at his words, and Jensen turned back to him in surprise.
"I'm not saying you have to come back with us, only that you're welcome, if you want to."
The growl deepened and lingered. The rest of the pack turned tail and loped into the woods. Milo shifted now, with no care for his nudity before the other werewolves. It was a natural state. He spoke softly to the lone wolf, without looking at his alpha. He knew why Jensen had asked him to stay. Omegas have a natural empathy, and Milo enjoyed taking care of his pack. He was both counselor and confessor. He could sense the pain and the fear that rolled off the other Omega, and it was instinctive to want to fix him.
"We want to help. It would be easier to talk if we were all in human form," he crooned.
The wolf fidgeted. He turned in circles, as if chasing his tail, and whimpered before sitting back on his haunches, then stared at Jensen without reprieve. Jensen caught his breath.
"I've seen that before. With pups. He can't shift, Milo. He's trying to, but he's not able to shift."
"Alpha, I think you should go. I think you should hunt for something for him to eat."
"Milo, I can't leave you here unprotected."
The stranger watched the exchange with interest.
You said it yourself. He is no danger to me, but you scare him. I can sense it.
He lifted his voice and looked directly to the lone wolf.
I think we Omegas should have some time together, away from the pack.
There was fractional relaxation in the dark wolf as he continued to study Jensen, looking for his reaction.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Something to eat. Any preferences?
Wild fried chicken, joked Milo.
Heh, fresh whatever it is, then, retorted Jensen as he shifted and loped into the woods.
From the corner of his eye, he saw the stranger blink and settle into a more relaxed sitting position. He breathed out and allowed himself to concentrate on hunting. Jared watched the alpha shift and stalk away, and allowed some of his tension to dissipate. He shuffled his front paws forward so that he lay belly to ground.
You're making me nervous, man. Come away from the edge, Milo drawled.
Jared crept forward a few inches, but his eyes never stopped checking between Milo and the last place that the alpha was visible. His heart was beating fast with fear. He could feel sweat cooling on his fur, and his tongue lolled out as he panted. He had heard Jensen's comment that any of them could bring him down, and he knew it was true. The mixed scents of the pack scared him, but the pack alpha and the other alpha in the pack both confused and overwhelmed him. The notes in their perfume and stance were familiar, but something about the pack alpha made him want to draw close and submit. He knew that submission was normal instinct for an Omega, but he had never wanted to feel that with his own alpha. His touch was abhorrent, even as he submitted to him, and he avoided his company whenever he could.
You know Jensen is a nice guy. He's my alpha, and I know I would respect him for that, whatever the circumstances, but he looks after all of us. He listens, and we all feel valued.
Jared wondered how well Milo could interpret the slight movements of his wolf form when the wearer shook his head and Milo continued.
You're not going to believe me, are you? I think things must have been bad for you. Jensen would never turn any of us out for getting sick, and it wouldn't be too much trouble for him if you are ill. He works at the hospital. He helps folks get better.
Milo inched forward a little, and Jared couldn't stop himself from reacting. He raised his back haunches and shuffled backwards toward the precipice until their distance was maintained. He heard Milo gasp, and the dark-haired, naked wearer scooted back several feet.
Come on, dude. How about you come forward as far?
He belly-walked a few inches and settled again. He couldn't see many choices here. If he relaxed, he would be taken down by one of the pack. He would be handed to the police, to be returned to his own alpha, and the punishment for his moment of lost control would be unbearable. Or maybe this pack would expect his submission, devise their own punishment, and keep him for their own purposes. Maybe they would kill him, but if that was their intention, this Milo wouldn't be trying to talk him from the ledge. He wouldn't go with them. He couldn't return to being any pack's Omega bitch. He closed his eyes and imagined falling. It would be fast, and the rush of air would be filled with the sense of freedom, the essence of this place that called to his soul. It wouldn't be such a bad way to go. The other Omega spoke again, and his voice was soft and comforting, but Jared wasn't concentrating on the words. His tail gave an occasional thump, and his body began to relax as the adrenaline started to break down and leave a steadying pump of blood in his veins. His wolf was as exhausted as the rest of him. He rested his snout on his front paws, but his eyes stayed open and alert, flickering to Milo and checking the surrounding area. At least nobody would be stalking him from behind. He smelled the pack alpha, Jensen, long before he saw him, and the pungent and all-encompassing aroma of fresh prey excited his nose,
traveled through his whole being until he was trembling and the saliva dripped from his razor teeth. He fidgeted his weight from side to side in hungry anticipation, and his tail wagged, but he would not move forward, despite Milo's encouragement. Jared had no thought of Milo once Jensen was in view. He locked gaze with the pack alpha and stared into the bright, mossy green eyes as the lightly dappled gray wolf approached him. He was carrying a large raccoon, and Jared's inner self couldn't find any disgust at the thought of eating the creature. In his mind, he was already tearing it into thick, bloody pieces and crunching on its bones with relish. He could feel a red mist fogging the corners of his mind, and he pulled control back with a start. He wouldn't allow himself to be tricked so simply. While his whole body shook with need, he counted Jensen's paces and, when he drew level with Milo, Jared bent his knees to stand and snarled a warning at him. Jensen ground to a halt, visibly shocked, with one paw still in the air. He stepped one more time, and blood dripped from his offering and stained the snow around him. Even then, Jared couldn't bear the elf's scent and approach. He backed away again. Over the dizzying rush of blood and want, he heard Milo shout a warning to Jensen. The elf dropped his catch, shifted back to his naked form, and crouched low to look at Jared's face. His voice was steady and calm.
"Hey, shh. It's just a meal. Nothing more, no wicked intentions, and nothing owed. You are hungry, aren't you, boy?"
He threw the dead creature to a halfway point and crouched again, beckoning Jared forward. Jared's whole body wriggled and shook. His eyes darted between the raccoon, Jensen, and Milo. The red mist continued to threaten, and he fought to push it back. He snarled again.
"What in hell?"
Jensen's question was directed at Milo.
"I have no idea, boss. Give it time, all right?"
Jared felt a twinge of guilt. Milo was an Omega, and he would undoubtedly be punished for his failure to please his Alpha. He wished he could help him, but he couldn't back down. The standoff lasted until the sun began to sink below the horizon. The raccoon lay between them, an enticing offering, or a Trojan horse. Each time Jensen and Milo dropped back, Jared inched forward, but he couldn't bring himself to finish the distance while the wolf pack wares tainted the air with their scent. Milo started to shiver, and Jensen told him to shift back to his wolf. They both reassured Jared that it was only for the warmth. Jared thought it was an unusually kind instruction that Jensen gave to the Omega. Jensen spoke to him shortly after.
"Look, I'm cold and hungry, buddy, and I know you're starving. We are going home. The meal is all yours. You should make sure you eat it all and find somewhere warm to shelter. You know where we live, and you are welcome to follow us. You shouldn't worry too much about the incident with the girl on Black Ridge. She's good. You turned away, and that means we can square this with an apology and some negotiation with the sheriff."
Jared knew that was a lie. No human would forgive such an act. He growled. Jensen gave a heavy sigh.
"You can't go on like this. You have to let someone help you. You know this is my pack and my territory, and I will not allow you to damage our reputation or hurt anyone here. We will bring you down and kill you if we have to."
And there it was, the show of dominance, the inevitable posturing and threats of a pack defending their territory from the strange wolf. Jensen stood, and Jared flinched with his whole being. He saw something flare and fade behind the stunning green eyes, and wondered what the Alpha was thinking.
"Look, you have choices. You can eat, find strength, and leave this place. We won't follow you. You can stay here alone, and as long as there is no trouble, we won't bother you. But we all share the same biology, and we know that hunger can destroy self-control. Your hunting sucks, buddy, so, for now, whenever our house is empty, we are going to leave some food for you."
Jensen frowned and thought,
I think the Christmas tree is a good place for that.
Jared's ears pricked up and his face tipped to the side in question. He didn't understand the Elfa's motives. Jensen put his hands up.
No tricks, just a need to stay friends with our neighbors.
He turned his back on Jared in a show of self-confidence. Just before he shifted and ran into the gloom, he spoke again.
Any time you want to talk, or need comfort or warmth, any time, you can find one of us, wherever we are, and we will help you. Please believe that.
Jared didn't dwell on the strangeness of such words. His ears pointed straight up and his snout lifted to smell the air. He sensed their retreat and his stomach cramped in anticipation. When he finally allowed himself to take the carcass, his teeth ripped into it with greed and his snout gathered blood. He gave in to the red mist.
Jensen. There was little time to discuss the events that evening, so Jensen got the entire pack up for a meeting early the next morning. Christian rubbed his eyes and moaned about lack of sleep, and Katie poked him in the ribs.
This is serious, you big elk.
Katie, Christian, and Chad were keen to hunt again, to find a place where the lone werewolf could be brought down safely, but Milo and Genevieve were less eager. Jensen stopped the debate with a firm refusal.
If we have to bring him down, it's going to be Chad with a tranquilizer dart.
Christian objected.
Boss, he's easy enough. That's not the point, Christian. He's not right. He's sick.
That makes it easier, Katie pointed out. Jen had worked the reasoning out. He's sick, Katie, and we have no idea if it's infectious. We can't bring him down. We can't risk that sort of contact.
Chad's eyes widened. You said you invited him to the house, to see us, any time. I did, and now I stand by it. Are we really the sort of pack who would turn a sick wolf, an Omega, out in the cold? Saying that, we will have to take precautions. No blood contact, no close contact. Don't share food or anything else. We will put food out for him, and whatever is left will be cleared using gloves. If he comes to you, encourage him to visit the vet. Tell him we will pay for the vet.
Oh, God! Milo had turned pale. Do you think he has rabies? Is it rabies?
Jensen wrapped his arm around Milo and hugged him close.
No. He's not displaying the right symptoms for that. I don't know what it could be, but I'll do some research, and if he sticks around, we'll see about it later. He was pretty freaked. He may have moved on. Will we go after him? Asked Christian. No, he's not our responsibility. If he wants to move on, it solves the problem. It's fine with me.
Even as he said it, Jensen knew he was lying. It wouldn't be fine. It would hurt. He wanted the chance to make things right for this Omega. He wanted to be the one who made things better. The word mate ghosted through his thoughts, and he batted it away. It made no sense. Chad spoke up.
Alpha? Yes, Chad. Milo and I were talking last night. I'm not sure about the Trank plan. Milo thinks we should build his trust slowly, and as long as he improves a bit, doesn't get worse, we should wait and let him come to us. Is that your opinion, Milo? Jensen asked.
Milo blushed.
It just seems that forcing ourselves on him won't work, however well we mean it. You saw him, even starving, with temptation of a meal. Every time we moved forward, he moved back. If we tranquilize him, it's aggressive. The trust is never going to come. When he came to town, he talked to people. He asked for a job. So we know he can interact, and it seems to me he finds people easier to approach than his own kind. Maybe we can build on that.
Chad added to the conversation.
We have a campsite with cabins a few miles into the park, in a secluded spot.
They're empty, ready for refurbishment in spring. I thought maybe if there was evidence of the Omega staying, I could have Sam Ferris unlock them, supply them up a little, a few logs and lighters, some blankets and some cans, make it look like an oversight. He might find them. It would give him respite, and we would not lose track of him. Jensen thought about it. Sam was Chad's fellow park ranger, a good colleague and a friend of theirs. She was also human, so there would be no werewolf scent from her presence.
Sounds like a plan, Chad. It couldn't hurt.
They broke up the meeting to go their separate ways, but Jen caught Jensen's arm to pull him into a private conversation.
Tell me, Alpha, is it any werewolf you're doing this for, or is it just him?
Jensen snapped the reply. Of course I would do it for any.
But, said Jen, with a quirk to her lips.
He sighed.
It feels special. He feels special.
He's sick, Jensen. Don't get your heart broken.
Genevieve rubbed her hand over his shoulder.
Okay?
Yeah, okay.
Before Jensen rode into town, he placed a plate of chicken and vegetables under the Christmas tree, thought for a moment, and went back to the house. He returned with a set of warm mittens and a knitted hat and arranged them on the tree above the meal. Aldous was harder to convince.
So not only is this werewolf a danger to our children, but he may be infectious, too.
I'm sorry, Jensen, but this isn't a decision your pack can make. I can't just let him go. I want the chopper out and I want him tranked and brought in today.
He's not dangerous, Aldous. I've seen him. We can keep it under control. Let us try. Give us a few days.
Aldous opened his mouth to argue further, but Jensen hushed him with an outstretched hand.
If you do it on your own, a dedicated chopper is going to take a lot out of the town budget, and he will be hiding. Give us a few days. In the meantime, you can check out missing persons, wanted persons, and recently released cons. If any of that gives you cause for concern, then I promise we will be out there helping you to bring him in.
Aldous rubbed his hand over his face.
Any of this goes wrong, you and your pack will be finished in this town, Jensen. There ain't nothing I'll be able to say that will save you.
Thanks, Aldous. Owe you one.
You owe me lots, plus Christmas dinner, dude.
Jensen couldn't help his disappointment when he came back home. The food and gifts lay untouched under the Christmas tree. He brewed himself a cup of coffee and made a phone call. His parents weren't in, so he left a message. Chapter 3. Jared. Jared woke in the lee of a thorny bush. His stomach was comfortably full. He remembered the taste of raw raccoon, and his stomach turned a little. His hand touched feathers. His fingers dug into blood-soaked snow, and he recalled that he had eaten again. After the raccoon, he had come across a hawk tearing into its prey. He hadn't been fast enough to catch the hawk, but its prey made a satisfactory snack. He assessed his situation. He was numb with cold and, oh God, oh God, oh God, he was distinctively human and naked. This wasn't meant to happen. He wasn't stupid. He hadn't shifted in the 5 years with his pack, but everyone else had, and it didn't happen like this, not without control, not when it made no sense. Then there had been the thing with the Wolf Pass werewolves the day before. He remembered the painful static and a high discordant screech. Even when he had covered his ears with his paws, it continued, unabated in his head, like a psychic burglar alarm. He thought they had some sort of weapon, but then the Alpha had spoken to him, in his human voice, and asked why he didn't answer them, and he hadn't heard. He hadn't known they were speaking. He tried to think back to when it all changed. Even in human form, he had been able to hear his pack's wolf thoughts,
They spoke to him, gave him commands, and his Elfa liked to croon his dirty thoughts in the times he came to the bedroom. Except it stopped. Their wolves grew quieter, until one day they became silent and never spoke to him again. He hadn't asked. Punishment came in all types. But what if? He couldn't bear to think it. What if they never stopped speaking? What if he stopped hearing? He uncurled, crouched down, and concentrated. He thought of his wolf, tried every technique he had seen the beta, Meg, teach her pups, but the wolf never came. He stayed in goosebumped cold flesh. He forced himself up, and his feet burned cold on the freezing snow. He endured the ice chill to find the remains of the unfortunate raccoon, and he ripped at its skin until he had gory fur slippers roughly tucked about his feet. He was covered in the blood and skin of his kills. He thought he must resemble a horror movie extra. He had to find some form of clothes, and he needed food and shelter, but he couldn't approach the town like this. It would guarantee the sort of attention he didn't want. He spent the day searching for the place he had shifted into his wolf, and then wandered aimlessly up the mountain. The shredded remains of his clothes clung wet to his body, and he forced himself further into the woods, chasing the pungent scent of old, discarded food. He found it in a remote clearing, a garbage can stuffed with the remains of some sort of hiker's picnic. He fell on it without pride, a discarded cheese sandwich, some potato chips, a brown-tinged pear, and half a bottle of sweet glucose-filled energy drink washed down his throat, a meal more delicious to him than any top chef could hope to serve. The air here was clean and pure. Maybe his wolf would scent werewolves from this distance, but that was yesterday. Today his wolf was weak, and he was human. He was in some sort of picnic place or campsite. There were paths and park signs indicating toilets, trail routes, and items of interest. For a moment he panicked and tried to hide, but then he noted the ranger signs. Closed for the season. Check back next summer. He relaxed and wandered along the interlocking pathways. There were discarded piles of snow-laden building supplies, and it looked like the repairs were delayed until the snow melted. He'd never visited the country, let alone the forest. He had stayed in the city all his life, but he read plenty. He knew there would be no thaw here until spring. The more he looked around, the more comfortable he became. It had been designed with rows of tall trees to shelter it from the worst of the weather, and the signs, the paths, and the human items gave him a connection to the only world he knew. When he came across the cabins, he was undecided as to whether he could actually squat here. But when he tried the door of the third building and it opened without resistance, he decided it was fate. He caught the faint whiff of a woman's perfume, but he opened a trunk and soft, dry blankets lay there, heady with the smell of detergent, and he told himself this was a human dwelling, and the sense of human occupation were bound to linger. He continued his tour of the cabin, sniffing at the homey fragrance of the blanket that he pulled cozy around his shoulders. The camp was clearly unoccupied, but it hadn't been cleared after the summer season. It housed a treasure trove of basic items and an entire carton of energy drinks. Maybe they were intended for the contractors who would repair the place. He wasn't going to fuss. He would find a way to pay for whatever he used, but he wasn't going to turn his back on good fortune. When night fell, he experimented until he had a passable log fire in the hearth. He spooned fruit from a can and then buried himself between blankets to sleep on the generous double bed. For the first time in years, he fell into a deep, comfortable, and uninterrupted sleep. The next day, when he explored the camp, he found overalls, paints, varnishes, and decorating supplies in several of the buildings. He studied the decor in each of the cabins, worked out the quantities, and when he was fairly sure of the intended color schemes, he applied masking tape, picked out the appropriate brush, and, with careful concentration and skill, he started to paint. He was painting when he heard the truck pull up. He ducked below the window ledge and sat motionless with his knees to his chest. Someone crunched through the snow, and he heard a creak of a wooden bench. He sniffed. Human, woman, and the same perfume he had smelled in his cabin. He closed his eyes and waited for discovery, but after a while he heard the steps recede and the truck pulled away. He peered out of the cabin door. A flask stood on the bench, and a piece of paper fluttered under it. There was a short note. "Lintel and bacon soup. I thought you might like to share. My name is Samantha. What's yours?" Jared sniffed tentatively. There was no taint, and it smelled amazing. He poured a drop and sipped at it, just barely coating his tongue. It tasted just as good as it smelled. He drank it all, savoring the thick warmth. It reminded him of his mother's cooking. He was 21, but he suddenly felt very young and lonely. He washed and dried the flask thoroughly and placed it back on the bench. The next day, he heard the truck from over a mile away. He smelled her at the same time, and it was cinnamon and talc and motherly. He hunkered down behind a pile of logs with his muzzle on his paws, but his ears pointed in eagerness and his tail twitched with impatience. She was middle-aged, an elegant lady in a ranger uniform, with long brunette hair and an open, friendly face. She parked the truck with no attempt to be quiet and made her way to collect the flask. She peered at the shiny interior. "It's very clean," she commented in no particular direction. Jared could see her looking for him, but she couldn't see him behind the logs, and she would undoubtedly be looking for somebody human. He wondered what she knew of him, and surmised that she thought he was supposed to be here, a painter employed by the parks to work on the cabins over the break. He hoped she wasn't there to evict him. Why share her soup? He knew he was fooling himself, but he already decided he liked her presence and wanted her to come again. She made her way to the open door of the cabin that he had been painting just before he shifted, again without warning. But at least he had been aware. "Wow," she stepped inside. "This is good, professional." She investigated the interior and stepped out again, her eyes searching the area for him. She settled on the bench, pulled a pack of sandwiches from her rucksack and laid it down, then took out another and opened it. He knew he should be still, but the control he had over his body was patchy. His tail wagged and a paw slipped. He knew she noticed, and he considered running, but his paws were not cooperating, and the very unwolfish thought that he would be clumsy and embarrass himself kept him still. She stood and slowly stepped forward until she could just see him over the pile of logs. She stopped again, and he looked up at her, half hopeful and half terrified. "Hey, wow, you're a big wolf, aren't you?" Jared hadn't considered that she may be scared of him, that her actions were both brave and foolish. He backed off a little and sat, or rather, fell down. "Uh-oh, you're having some trouble with your coordination there, buddy." He wanted the ground to open up and swallow him. She crouched to his height. "I'm supposed to be checking on security and then tracking an eagle on that ledge up there," she pointed. "I don't think anyone is going to steal anything with you here, do you? So I am going to go soon, and you can have the rest of my sandwiches if you like." She got back up, and her eyes did not leave him as she backed away. "Because you can't turn your back on a dangerous animal," Jared thought sadly. She halted before getting in her truck, looking thoughtfully at him. "You must know that my job is park ranger. One of my duties is to protect the wildlife in this zone. I check up, make sure things are okay. Sometimes, if animals get sick, I organize help for them. I suppose it means it is my job to keep you safe, so I'll be back. Maybe you'll tell me your name next time." Jensen. Jensen tried to hide his disappointment when the small gifts and food that he placed under the tree stayed untouched for a fifth day, but his pack knew him better. Genevieve, Milo, and Chad curled on the huge sofa with him, lending contact and affection. Chad carted his hand through Milo's hair while he cuddled close to their Alpha. Genevieve rested her head in Jensen's lap, and he curled a warm arm around her.
"Am I that obvious?" he sighed.
"Sorta, boss," said Genevieve.
"It's one of the many reasons we love you," added Milo.
"But not more than me," interrupted Chad.
"Not more than you."
Milo bent his head to Chad, and the room was filled with the sight, scent, and noise of the mate's affection. Jensen groaned in dismay.
"Nice one, douchebags," commented Genevieve when Jensen untangled and excused himself to work on an exercise plan for one of his patients.
Aldous found nothing on the tall man. There were no recent releases matching his description, and no crimes that could be linked. They ascertained that the man must have traveled from the city in Chad's truck and checked for missing persons, but while there were hundreds that could match such a general description, none were werewolves. His father called on all the contacts he knew within the were community, but nobody had any information on the Thin Wolf. Sam Ferris was Jensen's biggest hope. A colleague of Chad's and a friend to them all, she was the senior warden on the park, and she put her job and safety on the line by helping to plan Jared's refuge in the empty campsite and offering to initiate contact. As a human and a cheerful, friendly person, Milo and Chad thought she would be the most likely to succeed in gaining the lone were's trust. She had helped to organize the items planted in the cabins, and when Jensen had insisted on commandeering every energy drink from the stock of the ranger's office, she simply put the crate in her truck and signed a requisition for more. The warden kept in touch, but wouldn't mix with the pack for fear of their scent carrying. She also insisted on being able to independently assess the stranger, without pressure from Jensen. To that end, Jensen knew very little about the time she spent with the young werewolf. She phoned to reassure him that the were had eaten the food they left at the campsite and had accepted her presence, but she refused to divulge more than that. She suggested small items that he might place with the food under the tree and told him to be patient. Jensen knew she was waiting until she was sure that sharing the information would not cause the lone werewolf physical or emotional harm, but it didn't make him any less anxious for news of their progress. Jensen was ready to despair when Sam rolled her truck to the curb and invited herself in. She barely had her boots off and a coffee in her hand before Jensen pulled her into the study to report what she knew. He opened the conversation without small talk.
"I've smelled him close, but he hasn't come into the yard. He's taken nothing that we've left for him. Have you seen him?"
She smiled indulgently.
"You know I have. That much I told you over the phone. His name is Jared. He's a very handsome young man and a stunning wolf."
"You've seen both forms. So he can shift?"
"It appears so."
"What else did you find out?" Jensen couldn't get the news fast enough.
"He's very quiet. He says he is 21, but he appears young for his age. I've watched him close, and I spent some time upwind with binoculars. He doesn't have any recent injuries, but you're right about his wolf form. He has trouble with his movement. I've observed him in several situations, and it is a general incompetence. There is no individual limb that is affected. I've seen him trying to take prey, but he's not successful. He needs the food we are giving him, and I can already see some improvement in his condition. He's skittish for sure, but he hasn't been aggressive, and he has let me see him and even said a few words. He seems like a nice guy."
Jensen's brows knitted.
"What has he been doing all this time?"
"Painting. He's been redecorating the cabins, I can say for sure that his clumsiness doesn't extend to his human form. His work is incredibly neat and precise. Honestly, he's worth more than we're paying him in supplies." Jensen was stumped by the reply. He moved on to his next concern.
"How sick is he?"
Sam took some time to consider her reply.
"I asked him, and he told me he wasn't sick. He certainly doesn't appear ill when human, only malnourished and weak. If he was a child, I would suspect abuse. The way he talked about the jobs he could do for us. He opened up a bit to impress me, to let him stay, and what he said, what he accepted was normal. It was like he did every chore in his home. He said that an Omega was for doing what he was told. And he stressed over the neatness of his work, kept apologizing for it, and told me he always messed up, that it was no wonder he was worthless to his pack. But it was perfect, Jensen. Absolutely perfect. Honey, it broke my heart. I told him a little about Genevieve and Milo. I didn't tell him he was wrong, but I gave him something to think on."
Jensen frowned and tapped his fingers. He looked as though he were about to speak.
"Let me finish, Jensen. He has some troubles shifting, and something about the way he described it makes me think he's not practiced, like he's never done it before. He implied he wasn't used to being in the wolf body."
Jensen shook his head in frustration.
"That makes no sense. You've seen his age. The wolf just is. There is no need to get used to it because it takes the wheel. Instinct drives it."
"Like a wolf would never consider jumping from a cliff?" Sam asked gently. Jensen went quiet. He was perplexed.
"Yeah, like that. Is there any truth in the old wives' tale that a bite from a werewolf can turn a person? Could that have happened?"
Jensen laughed at that.
"No, Sam. That is definitely a myth. Our DNA is distinct, and nothing can change your genetic code to ours. You are completely safe." "Then I'm sorry. I just don't know. I can talk to the vet if you like. Maybe you can phone and ask your father if he knows of any similar health problems in wares."
"Sorry, Sam. I don't mean to be short with you. Just worried, you know. For him and for the pack. I can't tell them that, though."
"Oh, Jensen, they already know." She nudged him and gave a wry smile. "I hope you don't mind. I told Jared that carolers would be going through town tomorrow, and that everyone would congregate here when they finished. I asked him to give the pack a second chance, to give you a second chance. I invited him to come and see. The last 2 days, he's made brief trips down here. I saw him watch Jen near the library, and when you were out, he stood and stared at the house. I think he wanted to investigate, but he couldn't find the nerve. With a little encouragement, I think he will accept something. So pack up some of the small items and make sure they're under the tree when the carolers call. Nothing expensive, just things that show you care."
"It sounds like his alpha didn't care. He must have treated him like crap."
He chewed on his lip.
"To consider suicide, I can't imagine. I'm not surprised he doesn't trust us. Do you think he'll come?"
"I think he's lonely and curious. He knows that you could have come for him at any time, and you haven't. He accepts that you kept your word, and it seems to matter to him. We'll have to see."
Jensen drew her close and hugged her. Sam didn't flinch. She was used to the constant contact that the pack craved.
"Thanks, Sam. He wouldn't have opened up to anyone else."
"He's not out of the woods yet, Jensen."
Her eyes sparkled at the pun.
"But I think we can get him there."
Ding dong, merrily on high, in heaven bells are ringing.
A circle of carolers stood around the tree, their mouths open with an enthusiastic rendition of the lyrics. Jensen wasn't entirely sure they were all in key, and old Mrs. Baker had definitely consumed one too many sherries. It wasn't clear if she was singing the same carol as everyone else, but he blamed his oversensitive hearing for noticing the flaws. The pack moved among the crowd with warmed cider and hot chocolate. Chad made sure every child was given a candy cane. Even without seeing the clothes that Sam had picked for Jared from Jensen's wardrobe, he knew that the Omega had come. He scented him before he ever arrived in their yard. It pulled at him, strong, sweet, primal and earthy. Jensen tried not to stare at the tall figure hanging back in the shadows, but the slanted hazel eyes kept meeting his own, and Sam was right. The boy, no, man, was stunning. He stood taller than everyone, and though thin, his frame was large, his skin was ruddy with the cold wind, and his face was, well, heaven. Jared darted another glance toward him, and the pink tip of his tongue poked between wide lips and licked them to a shine. His cheekbones were sculpted, and his jaw strong and angular, the scruff of an early beard not detracting but adding to the handsome features. His hair hung shaggy and blew about his face in a soft tangle, and Jensen's hands itched to smooth through it, to grip into it and pull his face close so he could kiss. Oh, okay, stop that now. Jensen forced his stare away to mix with his pack and his visitors, busying himself with encouraging words, subtle touches, jokes, and laughter. When he glanced back at Jared, he saw Milo approaching the lone ware cautiously, proffering warm cider. He saw him flinch away, smelled the fear and adrenaline of his fight-or-flight reflex. But then he seemed to calm himself. He held his ground and politely refused any refreshments. Jensen grabbed at Christian's tray of hot chocolate and took a steaming mug. He stole a candy cane from Chad and then moved purposefully toward the tall ware. The hazel eyes tracked his progress, and he smelled another burst of fear, but Sam was moving toward Jared, too. She tapped at his elbow and smiled. He smiled back at her, and it was warm and wide with dimples and sunshine and fucking rainbows, and Jensen knew he was smitten. He stopped an arm's length from the younger werewolf and proffered the hot drink. "You look like more of a cocoa man," he said, and immediately regretted sounding like a dork. Sam moved, flushed to Jared, understanding the need for a werewolf to have a comforting touch. Jared stared, eyes locked onto Jensen, and a hand snaked out to snatch the mug from him. The scent between them was changing. A strong release of pheromones hit the back of Jensen's throat, and his eyes widened and darkened. Jared fidgeted uneasily, and for a moment appeared to tip his head to one side, revealing acres of firm-skinned neck. It didn't last. Jared snapped back upright and flicked his gaze to his large hands, warming around the mug.
"So I'm glad you came. It's good to see you again. Better, much better this time," stuttered Jensen.
Jared shuffled his feet. His knees bent, and he lowered his eyes in a familiar way. His hair fell forward to cover his face, but Jensen could see the glitter in his eyes.
"No, don't do that," spoke Jensen softly. "You don't do that for anyone."
Jared snapped to attention, and Jensen didn't see free will in it, but the automatic response to an alpha. He was lost for what to say next. So far, he had only succeeded in intimidating the Omega. Jared unexpectedly rescued the moment.
"I smell of you," he almost whispered.
Jensen looked confused.
"The clothes Sam gave me, they were yours. I smell of you," Jared repeated. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm the only one who approaches your size. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to—"
Jared cut in.
"It's okay. I don't mind."
There was a slight upturn in his lips, and a hint of heat added to his scent.
"Thank you. Thanks for all this. I will find a way to pay you back, I promise."
Jensen was going to refuse the offer, to say it didn't matter, but he noted the pride in the man's stance, so he simply offered up,
"I trust you. I know you will."
The singing ended, and the crowd started to break up. Congratulations were given, good nights exchanged, and Jensen and Jared stood a few feet from each other, by the Christmas tree. Katie grabbed at Christian's elbow, and together they shooed the rest of the pack into the house, and Sam followed.
"You can come in,"
Jensen said, with a trace of nerves. Jared looked to the door and back to the tree.
"No, I can't. I have to go back. I've got some things to finish."
He kicked at the soft snow.
"Really, there's nothing you have to do there."
Jared stepped back into the shadows.
"Damn," thought Jensen. "All right, maybe not, but I want to stay there."
The words were spoken firmly.
"Can I visit?"
The words tumbled as a plea from Jensen's lips.
"Perhaps, but not yet."
Jared was still backing up.
"I'm going to go now. You won't come after me, will you?"
"No, wait." Jensen flung out his hand to offer him the candy cane.
"This is for you, and there's a basket under the tree. It's just little stuff which you might need, and it's yours for nothing. But if you want to pay us back in any way, there's always wood to chop by the pile."
He pointed to the woodshed.
"You can do it when we're out, if you have to."
He ran his hands through his hair and chewed at his lip. He had no idea what he was doing.
"I'm going to go in now. I'll see you soon, maybe."
The Omega nodded and watched him as he returned to the house and pushed the door shut. When Jensen peeped from the window, he saw Jared reach to touch the tree, tip his head back to look at the angel, and then bend to grasp the basket. It took all of his composure to let his mate walk back into the wilderness. Jared. It was quite a hike to the campsite, but Jared was getting used to it. After years locked into the small space of a city apartment, living on poor quality, infrequent meals, it had been a difficult adjustment for his human body. He felt it transforming, growing stronger with every day that passed. He didn't know what he had expected of the evening, but he had tagged along and nobody made a fuss. Sam was an effective barrier. She prevented anyone from troubling him, and he enjoyed watching the choir and their traditions. By the time they reached the home of the wolf pack, he was relaxed, and he knew that nothing bad was likely to happen with so many human people buffering him. It was scary meeting Milo and Jensen again, but he had gotten used to Jensen's scent on the clothes he was wearing, and it somehow made the Alpha's presence less intimidating. He wished he hadn't opened his conversation with something so dorky, but Jensen didn't seem to notice. He wondered how he had missed the startling shade of Jensen's eyes, his pale freckled skin, and the kissable pink lips that sat in the perfect face. Jared had looked at Jensen's naked body that day by the gorge, the day the older wolf had brought a raccoon to him, and he regretted that he hadn't seen him. He wanted to see Jensen. He wanted to tear off his clothes and study him with his hands and his mouth and his body. He felt antsy, hot and cold and unfulfilled, and it was no way for an Omega to be. It was an Alpha's place to choose who he lay with, and Jared was ugly and stupid, not to mention he seemed to be forgetting he already had an Alpha and a pack in the city. He made it into the cabin with a tint of pink flush from a combination of cold and exertion. He placed the basket on the table and ran his fingers over the gifts. He picked up the music player in his hand and turned it lovingly in his fingers. The Christmas before his parents died, he was given one of these, but nobody had collected his belongings when he joined the pack. He couldn't count the number of times he wished for it, to put the earphones in, close his eyes, and block out the world. He tightened his fingers around it and popped it into his pocket. He would listen to it tonight, in his bed. Just one track of whatever music he found, so he could preserve the batteries. All the gifts were generous and well thought out. He put the food in the cupboards or in the little ice box beside the door, and then placed each of the other items on the table in view. He displayed a multi-knife, a hat, a scarf, gloves, a razor, a pen and notebook, and a musical snow globe that contained a model of a cottage with a Christmas tree. He wound the key in the globe to hear the tinny clockwork rendition of "O Christmas Tree," and he couldn't help but smile as he mumbled along to the slowing music with half-remembered lyrics. He decided to move it, to take pride of place on the mantelpiece above the hearth. It was still 4 days until Christmas, but it was already the best Christmas he could have hoped for. He wondered what he would be doing next year. Sam might be right about the friendly nature and kind hearts of the Wolf Pass wares, but any Alpha could only take so much before he lost patience with a useless Omega. He couldn't change his stupidity or how he looked, but there were improvements he could make. He would work at his wolf and practice hunting. Then, by spring, he might be able to live independently. By suggesting that Jared could chop wood in return for the pack's assistance, Jensen also sparked some new intentions and ideas for him. He would speak to Sam about some of them. He glanced at his new knife. He already had a purpose for it. Sam loaned him the key for the camp craft room, and Jared spent an entire day engrossed in his task, recalling the high school woodwork classes that he had loved. Back then, when he was human, he had wondered why the smell of fresh pine and the image of the trees that yielded it made him shudder with a frisson of excitement. Now he was surrounded by the scent and the wilderness, and he knew it was the call of his wolf, a plea for his soul to run free. When he was satisfied with his work, he sat back with a bottle of energy drink, inhaled the sharp fragrance of the wood shavings, and admired his creations. The next morning, Jared called at the sheriff's office and was asked to wait. His hand shook and he could feel the sweat on his brow.
"You wanted to see me?"
The sheriff was an imposing figure. Jared wiped his hands on his pants and bit his lip.
I have something I need to put right."
Aldous looked him up and down. He didn't seem at all surprised or angry. He waved Jared through to the back office.
"Would you like to start at the beginning, son?"
Sheriff Hodge took him up to Black Ridge in the patrol car. He introduced Jared and calmed Sarah's parents before he stepped back to let Jared speak. The young Ware stuttered his way through an apology, no explanation, just a pledge that he hadn't meant harm and that his wolf would never venture near them again. He faced Sarah and gave her the model rabbits he had so carefully carved. She took them in solemn silence and cried for her dead pets. He sniffed back his own tears as he made an offer to build her a new hutch if ever she wanted to keep another rabbit. She blew her nose and made him promise that it would be a castle hutch, fit for a princess rabbit, and he agreed. Sarah's ma hugged her child tight as her pa saw him to the door. There were no words of forgiveness, but their anger had cooled.
"I've got to say, what you did was all kinds of wrong, but you've certainly got some balls. We might take up your offer in spring. There'll likely be some young rabbits needing a home, and the girls' grieving will be done."
Jared let some of his tension go. He breathed out and shook the man's hand.
"Let Sam Ferris or Sheriff Hodge know when you need me, and I'll come over."
He got back into the car with the sheriff.
"What happens now?" he asked.
"What do you want to happen?" Aldous retorted.
"I want to stay, to help out at the camp, but it's not my decision.
Will you return me to my pack for punishment?"
He asked the question, but he knew he would fight a return, and if he was forced back to his Alpha, he would run again. He stared sightlessly out of the window, and his fingers curled into a tight ball against his palms.
"Son, you are 21 years old. You are over the age of majority, and the law in this town don't bow to anyone's domestic regulation. You turned yourself in, made your amends, and got a warning. As long as you stay out of trouble, I don't give a rat's arse where you choose to live or who with. I don't know what went on with your previous pack that had you running away without a thing to your name, but I'm gonna be clear. If anyone tries to take you away, without your consent, that is, if you don't want to go with them, then it is kidnapping and it is a crime. I will whoop their asses and see them out of this town on the toes of my boot. Anyone. I don't care if it's the dang president. This is my town, and I don't tolerate abuse under any name. You call me if you need help. I'll be there."
Jared let it all go with a shuddering sigh, and silent tears ran down his cheeks.
"Thanks."
Aldous dropped him off by the truck to the camp with another warning to keep out of trouble. His wolf woke in the dark of the night with his belly rubbing friction into the blankets and an unrelenting, grinding pressure in his stomach. His flesh crawled under his skin, and the blanket was wet beneath his sweat-damp fur. He shook his head in an attempt to rid himself from the ache that pulsed at his temple and the buzzing static that wouldn't cease. He rolled onto his back, wriggling from side to side and pawing at his ears.
He was sick.
Sam had asked him if he was, and he'd said no. He had been into town, seen numerous people, including Milo and Jensen, and he had put all of them at risk. At the thought of Jensen, a high-pitched whine escaped from him, and his body thrilled with an involuntary shudder. A slick formed and oozed from him, and he remembered this. There was a raw, cutting memory of the one time it had happened. He wasn't sick. He wasn't infectious. It was worse. He was in heat. The whine grew, and somehow became a long, loud howl that he was powerless to prevent. Scent assaulted him, and the wolf rubbed itself against the clothing that retained a fragment of Jensen's smell. His snout snuffled, drool coated his lips, and a thrumming of need, need, need echoed with the cramps in his belly. He found himself rolling in the cooling snow without memory of how he got there, and the howling started once more. His body dragged him towards the overpowering, thick and heady smell of the Wolf Pass Alphas. Both scents were sweet attraction, but Jensen's was pure bait and lure, a promise of sticky affection, hard knot, and pups. Jared wanted to be bred, ached to take Jensen's knot and soak in his seed, but more than that, he needed Jensen. He dragged his belly low, unable to resist dry-humping the ground as he moved, drawn by an age-old and irresistible force that whispered a promise of the perfect union, his mate. He struck off into the woods towards Jensen's home, the house with the bright Christmas tree in its yard. You might think that it was that Christmas tree which saved Jared, that he mated with Jensen under its protection, and all was well. But it wasn't. This wasn't the time, and it wasn't the tree.
Chapter 4. Jensen. Jensen snapped his eyes open with a jolt. The perfume that woke him was thicker than anything he had ever known, heavy with the call of sex and heat and mate, and it fogged his mind with a surge of pure lust. A needy howl traveled the night air, and he was suddenly full of energy and intensely alive. There was no thought before he dashed into the night, and his shift was fast and smooth. His paws hit the snow running, and his wolf took control with exhilarating instinct. The pack woke with him. The intensity of Jared's heat whipped up an abnormal sexual energy and manifested in frenzied need. Chad and Milo whimpered with the shared passion, and Chad pinned his mate to the bed to take what he needed. Katie and Genevieve whined their distress. Christian growled with the uninhibited response of a strong single alpha, with the right to win the affection of an unmated omega in heat. He shifted barely seconds after his pack alpha. His instinct superseded his loyalty, and he chased to gain ground on Jensen. Even as his muzzle lengthened and his fur formed, Jensen was ready for Christian's challenge. His front paws sprang unthinkingly into the leap which would clash him and his second-in-command and land them both on the soft blanket of snow. Another howl across the black distance had Christian fighting hard against his alpha's dominance, and Jensen clamped his jaws into the soft fur of his neck. They wrestled for their claim, coating their fur in the blood of their wounds, staining the powdery white ice until Christian rolled over and tipped his neck in submission. There wouldn't be anger or argument in the morning. It was the rough and tumble of wild survival, and Christian could no more prevent his actions than Jensen. It gave credence to Jensen's leadership and proclaimed his fitness to take a mate. He loped into the woods without a backward glance. The pack would take care of Christian. He didn't analyze the intensity of the heat that beckoned him. It represented the basis of his very survival, the desire for continuation and the promise of companionship. There was no doubt that Jared moved toward him with as much zeal as his own. The taste of the younger ware grew stronger in every breath he inhaled. There was nothing special about the patch of ground where they finally skidded to a halt in sight of each other. It was a patch of nondescript forest, with mixed organic debris and snow on the floor. A green canopy filtered the starlight above them, and the aroma of pine and earth and rabbit surrounded them. Jensen caught his breath, enthralled by the vision of a perfect face and unusual markings. Jared's wolf was lean but well-proportioned, and thick with the softest, dark coat. His eyes blazed with bright intelligence and arousal and something more that Jensen couldn't discern. "Jared, Jared, Jared," his inner voice chanted. Another howl rent the air, and his own wolf joined in. Jensen stood still and let Jared circle him. The younger wolf snuffled and huffed, approached him with a few skittish steps, and then backed away.
"Do you want this? Will you have me?"
Jensen thought he knew the answer. He asked with all the confidence of Alpha and was shocked by the snarled rebuttal and the tip of Jared's claws against his snout. He cocked his head and pricked his ears and threw a sharp rebuke at his mate. Jared stopped still for a moment and whined while he lowered his head and his paw pressed against his ear in distress. He backed up further, shaking his muzzle and overbalanced sideways into the snow. Jensen was on him in a moment, back legs firm to the ground and front paws resting on Jared's shoulder, demanding his mate's submission and the curve of his neck. He was rewarded with the sound of a high, lusty whine, but the Omega resisted him, snapped his teeth and rolled, and despite Jared's exquisite allure, Jensen could interpret the refusal. Somewhere in his heat-crazed mind, he retained memory of Jared's inability to hear the wolf voice. He backed up and nuzzled at Jared's throat before giving the faintest growl and a playful nip to his ear. Jared's tail thumped with delight, and Jensen untangled himself long enough for Jared to right himself and run away. There was a curl of disappointment in Jensen's stomach as he watched Jared's paws scrabble over the rough, frozen ground, but then the younger wolf slowed and glanced over his shoulder. The Omega gave a yip and a wiggle of his hips and doubled back to lick a hot, wet stripe over Jensen's snout. Jensen returned the lick, and Jared leaped back with the lift of all four paws from the ground. His hazel eyes sparked with sex, mischief, and determination. In that moment, Jensen thought he understood. Jared was demanding that his mate court him to prove himself worthy. Jensen would have to earn his right to breed with Jared. There was nothing more spoken by Jensen. He chased with a deliberate, slow pace, allowing Jared to get away, to hide and tease and pounce. The scrape of his teeth and fall of his paw were little more than foreplay, and the effect was electrifying and delicious. Jensen had nodded in meaningless couplings with other wares, but this was the first time he'd ever felt this primal, joyous connection. He was desperate for penetration. His cock stood unsheathed, hard and dripping, and yet he wanted to wait. He needed to make it right and perfect for Jared. Jensen didn't know how far they chased, or how many times Jared stumbled. The Omega finally slumped with his tongue lolling, and his breath steamed wisps into the night air. He rolled in the snow, belly up in submission, and invited Jensen in with a needy whine and the full curve of his neck. Jensen cuffed at him with the soft pad of his paw, coaxing him to crouch on all four paws with his hole presented, flexing and wet with fluids. Jensen could no longer hold back. He mounted Jared and gripped his front legs tight around him. He penetrated the tight, furled muscle with a powerful, smooth push and bottomed out with the click and grind of Jared's hips. They howled together, joyful and unfettered, and Jensen lost himself to sensation, running fast and hard into the hot, slick channel. The alpha bit into Jared's shoulder as his knot forced a wide path through the clenching pucker of muscle. He heard the satisfied whimper and felt the tight strain as his mate came, spilling hot white fluid that melted into the snow. He couldn't stop his own ejaculation. He released his first wad of rushing hot seed into his mate, claiming him with a yip and a howl. "So good, so beautiful, so mine, mine, mine," he chanted as he nuzzled into the silky fur and pliant body. They moved together, finding a comfortable compromise as the nodding continued, tying him to Jared, filling him, breeding him with Jensen's seed for hours, squeezing one body-shaking orgasm after another from Jared's oversensitized flesh. Jensen licked and worried at Jared's fur, keen to demonstrate his affection, and Jared tiredly returned the action. When the knot finally slipped loose, they collapsed, sated and fatigued, and Jensen curled protectively around his strangely silent mate. Jensen woke with the first weak rays of daylight. His whole wolf ached, and he was cold and alone on the messy, icy cold ground. Jared's tracks wound upwards, and his scent followed the same trail, without his heat. Jensen's heart squeezed. An Omega's heat will last up to a week, or until fertilization has occurred. Could Jared have become pregnant from their first mating? He couldn't think clearly. The whirl of possibilities started in his head, along with the knowledge that Jared had rejected him as soon as his heat had ceased. It was a devastating discovery for him. Jared. Jared poured more water from the pot by the fire. He stood in the tub and tipped it over his body. He scrubbed soap over his skin and rinsed again. When the water cooled, he threw a blanket over his bare shoulders and sat curled on the squishy chair by the hearth. He stared into the shimmering flicker of the flames, and he shivered despite the warmth. He glanced to the cabin door, locked from the inside, and braced with a solid table against it. He checked again that all the window shutters were securely sealed. His hand rubbed absently over his raw, scraped stomach, but the grazes and nips that bore the burden of proof of his coupling. Mating, the faint voice in his head corrected him, were already healing. He was freaking out. He wanted to throw the cabin open, to run to Jensen, to bury himself against him and stay there for the rest of his life. Or to flee in the opposite direction, to lose himself far away and deep in the cold wilderness. But those ideas weren't realistic. His wolf had retreated and his heat was gone, and he had no clue if its brevity was a result of the long-time use of wolf suppressants, or if something more had happened, something that would reshape his very existence. His large fingers spread over his hollowed belly, and he hummed. If there was even the slightest possibility of new life, he would stand his ground. There would be no repeat of the agonizing internal clawing of death before life took hold. It was his ugliness and his worthlessness, and he would not let that extend to the shining glory that was Jensen's hereditary bounty. He knew he would protect this living gift with his last breath and regale it with stories of their night of passion, of the affection and intimacy that sparked its very being. He uncurled his legs and stood. He forced himself to make a bowl of instant oatmeal. He didn't taste its goodness, but he knew he had to eat. He held the smooth cylindrical pen that smelled of Jensen and opened the empty, lined notebook. He scrunched his face in concentration and started a journal with the events of the night. If this was the best he ever had, then he wanted to capture all of the feeling, the lust, the need, the comfort and completeness of it. 3 pages were torn from the book before he was satisfied that he had achieved some reflection of his experience. The writing forced him to analyze his emotions, and he pushed back the nagging wrong that scraped and hissed from the depth of his memory. He knew his lust had been consummated in the soft body of his wolf, but couldn't help the feeling that his human had somehow stayed with the wolf in its passion, that it had lent its consciousness to that form. He made a nest of blankets on his bed and cuddled deep into them. His fingers sought the music player that he had placed close the night before. He snugged in the earpieces, skipped to the next unknown track, and pressed play. Coldplay's Fix You flooded over him. When you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone but it goes to waste, could it be worse? Tears fell like bitter rain from beneath his lashes, but he couldn't bring himself to stop the music. He gave in to his exhaustion and slept. The loud rattle of the doorknob and battering of knuckles on wood woke him in the late afternoon, and he heard Sam's voice, laced with frantic concern. "Honey, are you in there? Jared, it's me, Sam." Footsteps crunched as she circled the cabin, trying each of the shutters. She stopped by the window nearest to the bed. "Jared, hon, at least let me know you're alive in there." "Go away." "Jared, please." Jared pulled his knees into his chest and rested his head on them. "Jared, do you know what Jensen is doing right now?" His pulse quickened in panic. Jensen would be with his pack, boasting about Jared's weakness and calling the vet to buy medication. He covered his ears, but he still heard. "We don't know either, Jared, because he went home and shut himself in his room, and none of his pack, not even Milo, can get him to speak. There's probably plenty of reasons why you're freaking out, but you will both have to come out sooner or later." She paused, listening for his reply. "You know, you can talk to me, Jared."
"Please go." "Okay, but just so you know, I'll be back. I'm not going to let you mope and make yourself ill."
He heard her steps receding, and the truck pulled away. Jensen, his mate, his alpha, had shut himself away. His stomach turned with nerves, and he didn't know what it meant. There was nothing similar in his experience. This alpha was utterly different to his previous pack alpha. Yes, previous alpha. Small A, because he didn't have to go back, and Sheriff Hodge wouldn't allow it to happen. He wrapped his blankets tighter around him and stared at a point on the floor without seeing. He skipped the MP3 back and replayed the last track. And high up above or down below, when you're too in love to let it go, but if you never try, you'll never know just what you're worth. Lights will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try to fix you. He pictured the bright home of the Wolf Pass Pack and wondered about the confidence their Omegas possessed. He thought about the way Jensen let them socialize outside their home, and he recalled Genevieve's bubbly smile when she ran home from her work at the library. Then there were the soft touches and easy banter that the pack displayed when they welcomed the carol singers under the light of their Christmas tree. He wondered if he could ever be fixed, if he could ever be good enough to have what they had. Jensen. The pack had been waiting when Jensen arrived home. They grinned widely at him. Chad, Milo, Jen, and Christian were ripe with the stink of sex and hugged each other close with touches of affection. Chad had made a cheeky comment about noisy sex, and Jensen clenched his fist and planted it on Chad's chin without a single word. In the stunned aftermath, Katie, Jen, and Milo had looked around for Jared and realized that he wasn't with their alpha. "Christ," moaned Chad. "Boss? Alpha?" Their shock gave him time to slam his bedroom door and turn the key. He heard them, all of them, and he knew it made him a bad alpha and a poor leader, but he couldn't bring himself to face their questions. He didn't need their pity. He knew he should be ashamed of the rejection, but he didn't care. He only craved his mate, but his mate didn't want him. It was Christmas Eve. He heard Steve and Misha return home, and it was the first time he hadn't welcomed members of his pack home. He heard the hushed whispers of Katie and Christian trying to explain something, which they couldn't possibly know. When Steve's temper exploded, and he threatened to find Jared and teach him a lesson, Jensen relented and emerged from his room. He stood at the top of the stairs, and they all turned to look at him. "Nobody follows him. Nobody hurts my mate. I will kill anyone who harms him. Do you understand me?" His voice was liquid steel and dripping with intent. Wide eyes and worried faces stared up at him. He straightened and gritted his teeth. "It's Christmas. We should appreciate our time together. Who's cooking? I'll help." He ran a hand through his hair and added, with a growl, "No, I don't want to talk about it." Holiday crackers were pulled and jokes exchanged, but the atmosphere around the table was strained. Every time Jensen looked up, at least one of his pack were gazing at him with concern. He was operating on automatic and was relieved when everyone huddled together to watch a movie. He excused himself to go and sit with his laptop in his study, scrolling useless pages on the internet and listening to music. When the telephone rang, he answered without delay. There was no point in ruining the movie for the others.
"Hey, son."
His father's voice resonated on loudspeaker.
"Oh, Pa, I'm sorry, I should have rung you. Christmas and all that."
"Well, we're both busy alphas. We'll have a long chat on Skype tomorrow. Your Ma is going to make sure all your cousins say hi and remind you that her Christmas pudding tastes best."
Jensen forced a laugh, grateful that his Pa couldn't see his face.
"I have to play Santa a little later, but I wanted to talk to you about that young ware you were fretting over."
His father's tone changed, and he recognized the sympathetic overtones that he adopted for stressful news. Jensen's breath caught in his chest. His father continued to speak.
"I asked about, did some research, and I found some data and a couple of vets with an interest in cases that seem similar."
"Thanks, Pa."
"There's not much to thank me for, son. I was going to wait until after Christmas, but the last time we spoke, I could hear you pining all the way through this either connection. I know you well enough to think you like this Jared a whole lot. Sometimes it's best to rip the Band-Aid off quickly, get the pain over with, so you can move on."
His guts clenched.
"Why would I need to move on? Is it infectious? Is the pack at risk?"
He wondered why the prospect bothered him less than a life without Jared.
How about you get comfortable? I'll start at the beginning and see if the situation fits.
Jensen settled on his deep, squashy easy chair.
Shoot.
Do you remember back in the 90s, a pharmaceutical company produced a suppressant for the inner werewolf? It was aimed at high flyers and ambitious werewolves, so they could move into the city without the hassle of their wolf needing space and freedom. Their children could grow up normal in human schools, without the stigma of being a werewolf.
They had adverts, remembered Jensen. Bright and shiny like tampon adverts. They showed children happily playing with each other, and then revealed that one was a werewolf, but nobody could tell.
There was an uproar among the packs. They implied there was something wrong with our kind.
It was withdrawn, wasn't it?
Officially, they stopped production, but it wasn't because of the fuss. It lost its license when independent medical trials revealed serious side effects. Unfortunately, production is still underway in other countries, and there's a black market for it.
What does this have to do with Jared?
If he's a city wolf, then his parents would have been in the target market when suppressant use was at its peak. There were a lot of parents who weren't prepared to give up their pup's human facade. They bought on the black market and continued to use them. While their pups took the drug, they never shifted, couldn't go into heat, never produced wolf scent, and weren't bothered by the overload of city life on their wolf senses.
Why would an alpha allow an unsafe drug to be used on the pups in their pack?
A lot of city packs are no more than a single set of mates with pups, much the same as a human family. Some thought it worth the risk, and there was nobody else to argue against it. As long as the suppressant was stopped during puberty, it seemed to be safe. Parents weaned their pups off at about 14 years old, and it posed no difficulty unless the pills were suddenly withdrawn, when there was a minor risk of short-term aggression.
Jensen's brows knitted.
So you're saying that even if he took suppressants, they don't cause any problems? Why mention it?
Alan Ackles went silent for a minute, as if gathering his thoughts.
You mentioned the possibility of abuse, and told me that he was an Omega who hadn't been in his wolf form until recently.
He told Sam he wasn't used to it.
Jensen, I am one of the biggest supporters of Werewolf Society, but just as there are some badly flawed people, we are not without our rotten apples.
I know, Pa.
There are a small number of packs, controlled by sick individuals. Am I right in assuming that Jared is an attractive boy? That he looks young for his age?
He's beautiful. The words caught in his throat.
There are a few alphas with nasty perversions. One of the popular ones is a penchant for keeping young humans for pleasure and service. Of course, keeping a human like that is illegal and can lead to lifetime imprisonment or a sly shiv in the stomach. What isn't illegal, and will often pass as domestic business, is the acquisition of a pretty Omega who is kept on suppressants. For all intents and purposes, they remain human, and an Omega is easier to mold into submission.
Jensen wanted to throw up, or punch somebody, or both.
Oh, God, he said weakly.
Does that ring true for your Omega, son?
He had nothing. He was shy with humans, but terrified of us. It fits, doesn't it? You said the suppressants were safe until puberty. What happens if they're used after that?
Another silence, and Jensen closed his eyes and his nails dug into his palms.
Those situations, Jen. The alpha isn't looking for a long-term mate. Once they pass the pretty stage, they're disposable, so it doesn't matter about the effects.
What effects?
As you know, the werewolf brain is split into two main divisions. In a pup, the suppressants ensure that the wolf portion of the brain doesn't develop. The synapses disconnect. Whole areas of wolf instinct and ability are left dormant and degenerate. If the suppressants are removed during puberty, then there is a rapid burst of brain development, and the wolf brain catches up. As long as suppressants are never used again, they become normal, functioning werewolves.
If the suppressants aren't removed, what then?
The wolf suffers permanent brain damage. It gradually loses the ability to communicate and learn. It doesn't develop proper coordination, it can't shift properly, and is a poor hunter. It becomes a problem. It is a pup in a wolf's body, and it will play like a pup, with none of the care that comes with the danger of a full-grown wolf. It can quickly become frustrated, lose control, and destroy someone it is playing with.
No, Jared is fine. He can pull back.
His human form will be perfect, more human than any other were, but you told me yourself. His wolf is incompetent. He's deaf, mute, and clumsy.
So there must be a solution. He can continue with suppressants and stay human. He wouldn't miss his wolf.
Over time, the suppressants will destroy what little wolf function he has left. And when the wolf brain dies, so does he.
What do the vets say? How have they treated others?
If the Alpha doesn't kill the Omega, then the pack turns it out. It dies of starvation, or, if it is picked up stray, the authorities will assess risk to the population and its quality of life. The condition is generally diagnosed at autopsy or by the vet, who will put it down humanely.
Alan paused.
Jared would be sedated. There would be no suffering.
The words dropped from his father like it was a mundane fact, a recipe for cookies, or advice on a financial investment. But it wasn't. This was about a sentient being, his mate, his future, and just maybe his pups. And there had to be a solution, any solution. He wouldn't accept this, wouldn't let it end before it had started. He could claw his way back from Jared's rejection, even covet him from afar, as long as his mate was safe and happy. But he couldn't accept his death. He would kill anyone who came to extinguish his light, and that made Jensen the dangerous animal. He sweated, and his nails drew blood from his curled flesh. What if it can be proven that the wolf isn't dangerous? What then?
Then you have to consider its quality of life.
How do you mean? Jensen gave a slight wolfish whine.
Well, take the heat, for example. Omegas are driven by the need to create and nurture. The wolf will still go into heat, but it has the mental age of a pup. There is no way of communicating with it, so consent cannot be ascertained. Will it even understand what is happening to its body? The Omega becomes an outcast with no prospect of a mate.
Jensen dropped the phone. His father's voice continued from the speaker, but he didn't hear the words. What if Jared hadn't consented? Did he even understand the game they played? Did he creep away, sullied and confused? He ran to the bathroom, where he heaved his evening meal into the toilet. He sat on the cold, tiled floor with his hands over his face. Oh God, oh God, oh God. Milo crept in and came to sit beside him. He proffered the phone to Jensen. I told him you'd call back, he said. Were you eavesdropping, Milo? The Omega dropped his eyes and colored. I heard it ring. I was going to answer it, but you picked up first. I didn't mean to listen, but we are all so worried about you. Milo. Milo shuffled close to stroke his back. I wouldn't have stayed. But he's wrong. They're wrong. Maybe Jared's wolf is damaged, but he does have intelligence and control. Think about it. He would have jumped at the gorge the day we chased him. And he shook his head for no. You cannot deny we both saw that. He faced us down until we left, and you know a starving pup could not have resisted food like he did. He stopped before he hurt Sarah, and I am sure, I am certain, he chose to mate with you. He made googly eyes at you throughout the carol singing. His desire leaked pheromones even before his heat struck. Jensen sniffed and allowed Milo to pull him from the floor and lead him back to the chair in his study. Are you saying you think there is nothing wrong with Jared? No. You need to look at this differently, Jensen. You're the physical therapist. You've explained to me how, when certain parts of the brain are damaged, other areas can take over the task. For instance, right-handed people can learn to write with their left hand, and stroke victims can relearn speech and motor control because other areas of the brain can compensate. Realization dawned. Jensen's eyes widened and his jaw dropped. Jared's human brain compensates when his wolf brain can't complete the task. It was Jared's human who considered jumping when the wolf couldn't cope with the situation. And it was probably the human brain which pulled him from Sarah and worked out that raiding garbage and keeping a distance from town was safer. Jensen punched the air. He can be fixed, Milo. I can develop a rehab schedule for him. I can fix him. For that, you'll have to talk to him, Alpha. The air was sucked out of Jensen in a moment. I'm not sure, Milo. Last night, what we did, I'm not sure now if he gave his consent. As soon as his heat subsided, he ran away from me. I was so certain he was my mate, I hardly stopped to consider that he couldn't communicate. Pa was right about that. So are you saying that Jared didn't have any chance to escape from you? No, I mean, yes, he did. He fought me at first and batted my nose. I stopped. I thought he would walk away, but then he came back to me. He licked my nose and wiggled his tail, so I followed. And he didn't whump you again? No. Alpha, will you ever learn to listen to yourself? Of course he can communicate. He didn't need psychic speech to tell you what he wanted, and you heard every word he said. Jensen calmed, and Milo smiled at him. Do you think so? The Alpha asked, but he already knew the answer. A steady hand patted his shoulder. The things that Jared has been through, there's a lot more than physical damage to fix. Top of the list to mend is trust. The best person for that job is his mate. Jensen allowed himself to join his pack for a movie marathon of The Grinch and Polar Express, but his mind raced with possibilities. The pack welcomed Christmas Day on the 12th strike of midnight by throwing snowballs at each other in the yard. The elegant Christmas tree lit their game. Jensen shook snow from its branches and took shelter from cold missiles behind it, and the angel at its peak stood silent and still with its wings outstretched and halo shimmering. In the midst of his pack's laughter, Jensen stopped. He looked and actually saw the tree. It suddenly became clear to him what he should do. Jared. The sun rose on a dull Christmas morning. It had been a complete day since running from Jensen, and nobody had come to drag him away or pour poison into him to end a possible pregnancy. The wolf pass Alpha, his mate, supplied the whisper of a thought, had respected his decision to walk away from his pack. Jared wondered why the very absence he had wished for felt like emptiness. He pushed his doubts aside and rubbed a hand over his belly as he said, "Happy Christmas," aloud to it. If there was even the teeniest possibility that there was a scrap of life within him, he was determined to celebrate this very first Christmas with it. He searched through the cupboards to find a bag of coffee, some sugar and creamer, and then warmed water to make a thick, sweet drink. He kept the cabin locked, but he stacked the fire high and let it blaze.
He reached for the snow globe on the mantelpiece, wound its key, and sang to the verse. He shook the glitter water to watch snow fall on the tiny cottage with its tree. When the tinny tone ended, he reached for his MP3 player and scrolled through the list of songs. He settled on Fairy Tale of New York, curled his feet under him on the soft chair, picked up a knotty lump of pine, and began to whittle and shape it with his penknife. The sound of Sam's truck broke his concentration. He placed the tiny wooden penguin on the coffee table with the sandpaper he was using to smooth it. He peered through the sliver of a gap in the shutters to watch his visitor. He was shocked that Sam would take time to visit him on Christmas Day. The passenger door of the truck slammed in tandem with Sam's, and Jared's heart thudded against his ribs. He adjusted his angle to glimpse her companion, but the deep, powerful voice left him in no doubt.
"Apparently, this is the place to be on Christmas Day. Heck yeah. Now you can stay in there and mope, or you can get out here and take your share of the turkey, and there ain't nobody gonna hurt you. I can promise that, because I am the law in this town." Sheriff Hodge's laugh boomed across the campsite. Sam joined in with his laugh. "Ignore him. You do exactly what you want, but we are setting the table for Christmas dinner, and you are welcome to join us."
Aldous collected all the picnic tables together and balanced them to a semblance of the same height using an assortment of rocks and twigs, while Sam spread white linen sheets for tablecloths. Another truck crunched through the snow and squeaked to a halt. The scent of its occupants was strong and familiar. Jared unlocked the window shutters and opened them a fraction to watch Jensen, Chad, and Christian maneuver a perfectly shaped fir tree in a gaily patterned pot to a position near the makeshift dinner table. More of the Wolf Pass pack arrived shortly after that, and Jared forgot his fear to watch in fascination as Genevieve and Katie unpacked fairy lights, delicate ornaments, and golden chains to hang on the tree. They slapped away hands that would help them, in favor of their own perfection. Around them, place settings took shape with napkins, placemats, and sparkling glasses. Jensen ran a thick cable from the back of the ranger's truck and lent a hand to lift or carry, wherever his help was needed. Jared opened the shutters fully to stare at the alpha's form as he flexed and worked. He studied the way Jensen's hand carted through his must golden brown hair, and how he chewed on his lip when he concentrated on a task. For a moment, Jared forgot himself, and Jensen straightened and glanced in his direction. They found themselves looking directly at each other. The lines around Jensen's eyes crinkled, his eyes sparkled with fun, and his lips curled into a wide, genuine smile. Jared ducked back behind the cover of solid wall, but his own lips quirked up and he blushed. Sam finished dressing the table with sprigs of holly and pine cones. Milo's arrival as he pulled up was greeted with a cheer and a round of applause, and the smell that accompanied him was probably the best Jared had ever known. There were the thick, meaty notes of beef and turkey, the sharp citrus and sweet of honey-roasted vegetables, the crisp oil of roast sweet potatoes, and the spice of nutmeg and cinnamon. He closed his eyes and inhaled the heaven of it. Sturdy boxes of foil-wrapped food were unloaded by werewolves with grumbling stomachs, hungry groans, and smacking lips. He was startled from his trance by a knock at the door. He peeked at Sam and Jensen, who stood there with wide, expectant grins. Jensen twisted his head and leaned back so that they could see each other through the window. He held up a golden, shiny object. "We need the tallest ware in the Wolf Pass pack to place the angel on the tree. It's a tradition," he said in mock seriousness. His hand trembled as he moved the table that braced the door and unbolted the locks, but he didn't know if the cause was nerves or anticipation. He took the last tentative step over the threshold, and Jensen slipped a reassuring hand over his to steer him to the Christmas tree. Aldous, Sam, and members of the pack all smiled at him, but they kept their distance, being careful not to crowd him. Jared stood on tiptoe to place the angel at the pinnacle of the evergreen, and Jensen connected the last wire to flood the glow of pastel lights over the tree. It bathed the scene in a soft rainbow, which reflected from the snow and shone over Jensen, his mate, his alpha. "Lights will guide you home." Jared's mind supplied the lyric and gave it meaning. Jared stood back to admire the view. He brushed his fingers over the smooth needles and tipped his head up to look at the angel atop the tree. He let himself relax into his mate's steady, circling arms, and he felt the gentle caress of Jensen's long fingers tangling through his hair. Jensen's warm breath huffed on his ear. "You are beautiful. I want you to put the angel on top of our tree every year. I want to celebrate every year with you. And one day I want to be able to share all the wonder and love of Christmas with pups of our own. Whatever it was that happened to you, we can fix it together." Tears slipped over Jared's lashes. He turned into his mate's embrace, burying his face in the strong, comforting scent. He nuzzled at Jensen's neck, and when Jensen chucked fingers under his chin to guide him, he licked his lips and slid them over the open and expectant pink mouth for a short, wet, and gentle kiss. He looked into the moss-green eyes that blinked with full, thick lashes, and he saw the anxiety and vulnerability of an alpha, his alpha, who had put all of himself on the line on Christmas Day, with every possibility of a public humiliation. He traced his fingers over the proud jaw and across the freckled nose. "I think I'd like to try," Jared answered. A breeze blustered through the campsite. The Christmas tree shook and chimed with the sway of a dozen hanging bells. In the end, it was this Christmas tree that saved Jared. The end.